talk a lot about protecting your energy over your time. And so right now, I'm a creator. I get a lot of requests and opportunities, and I have a hard time saying no. So how do you personally decide what to take on and what to let go of, especially if something leads to becoming something different?
Yeah, so there's a lot there because, unlike before, there's too much opportunity. If you have an abundant philosophy, there's too much opportunity, options, and touches of favor. So prioritization becomes key. My philosophy is that you're made by what you say no to, but you should have alternative buckets in order to facilitate helping people when you can't do it. So first of all, how do we prioritize where and who to spend our time with? There's three things that I utilize. One, relativity. So I prioritize relativity. Relativity is actually something that Einstein will talk about in the context of space and time. But what relativity really is meaning. Meaning is in your control. So when I talk about what is the relativity of this opportunity, option, or touch of favor, what's the relativity of the ask? What's the relativity of the person that I'm working with or family member, et cetera? That's the first criteria to me, because it's personalized and also in my control to give meaning to this opportunity. So I'm already doing a quantitative analysis saying, okay, what's the relativity of this opportunity? Two, I then use association. So association could be the organization, it could be a family association, it could be friend, it could be employee, it could be investor. So you're starting to see how association can be used as a criteria to prioritize and also change the meaning or the relativity of the opportunity. It could either make it go up or make it go down. And then the last one becomes really interesting because you really have to know what's important to you, which is how much is this going to feed me? Now, I used to say feed that which feeds you, fire that which bleeds you. Not true at all in my opinion anymore from what I've learned. So I am fed a lot of times by what bleeds me. And it really came to an awareness when my mom passed recently, because the last few years, especially, you know, everyone, mom probably bleeds them as they get older. Trust me, you're not even close to equal compared to how you bled your mom. But for me, I said, wait a second, I was fed so much more by my mom bleeding me. Just like I'm fed so much by my kids bleeding me, my employees bleeding me. So when I use the third criteria, I'm looking to see how much it feeds me in the respect of what I'm learning from it, how I'm growing from it. Not that it's not hard or it's bleeding me of certain things. And so for me, I, number one, say thank you when I'm overloaded with opportunity, options, and touches of favor. I then prioritize it by, one, the incremental time that I'm given each day, 24 hours. So within the context of my timing and risk tolerance, what's the relativity association and how much is it going to feed me? And if it's not in something I'm capable of doing, then what I'm starting to do is look for clues and patterns, how to create buckets. So some people ask me for funding, right? A lot of people just ask me for donations. So I'm doing this real quick analysis and I'll say, hey, I'm sorry, I cannot help you at this time, but here is MeltzerFunding.com. Or come to my free Friday training and I at least can help to help you and be empowered to make the money or to do whatever else. So very rarely now do I not have a bucket in which I can help. So I'm saying no to their direct acts, but giving them an alternative value of saying, not at this time, but would it help you if you joined this or were invited to this or I introduce you to this person that may be able to help you? And therefore, I don't feel like it's a zero-sum game that I don't have time to help you, therefore I can't help. Is that fair? Cool. All right, next question, Pascal.
So my mom passed through recently.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
That's just recording, not amplification.
So my mom passed recently as well, and she was also a big motivation to build my startup. And I was just wondering, in general, regardless the industry, what is your advice, or how can you motivate someone who hears that, yeah, this already exists, and there's plenty of them, right? barbershop. Why would you open a barbershop when there's so many? How can you motivate them?
Yeah, so let's distinguish a difference between motivation and inspiration. So for me, motivation is an ability to help someone get started, to get up, to get back started, or to get back up. Motivation is like rocket fuel, not like rocket plan, like rocket fuel. It gets you up and out, but it's not going to get you there. You're going to burn out. You can't be motivated in an activity all the time because there's too much interference to the infinite energy that you have. And so understanding, first of all, motivation, how I see it and the purpose of it compared to inspiration. So if we, regardless of what you believe and think you want, et cetera, that has nothing to do with anybody else, especially the people that love us the most. Why do I say that? I just dealt with this on one of my coaching calls this morning. Realize that people that love you the most are also the most afraid for you. They're more afraid for you than they are for themselves. Therefore, the advice that they give you will be based off of a fear that you're going to get hurt or you're going to fail. This is not a good prescription for success, especially as an entrepreneur, because you're taking the person that you love and respect the most, feel indebted to the most, and then you're taking and prioritizing their advice to you because they love you so much and you love them and prioritize them, and they're actually harming you in the dichotomy of the Tao, which is they're harming you by protecting you. Because there is no way you're going to get to where you want to be without failure, pain, struggle, and lessons. There's no way. I've never met one billionaire, and I know a ton. I've never met one Hall of Famer, and I know a ton. I've never met one famous musician or actor, and I know a ton, that hasn't failed a miserable amount of times. So if you have someone giving you advice that doesn't want you to fail, doesn't want you to get hurt, doesn't want you to go broke, doesn't want you to get divorced, doesn't want you to, all the things that happen in the struggle, then do not take their advice. Just say thank you. Because you love me more than I love myself, because I'm going to go ahead and do this, because I'm okay with failing and the pain and the suffering of being an entrepreneur. But I just want to tell you, I appreciate the fact that you are so afraid and love me so much for me, but I'm not taking your advice. Yes, there are 1,000 barbershops, and I'm going to be number 1,001. And that's inspiration. All right, next question. Thank you. Hi.
Hi.
How are you? Do you have a question for me?
No, I just wanted to see, and I wanted to say hello because I'm an entrepreneur.
So you are an entrepreneur.
So.
You're the best dressed entrepreneur I've seen all day. What's your name?
David Da Vinci, yeah.
Oh, that is a great name, David. I couldn't think of a better name. Do you know what David means, the name David?
No, what does it mean?
It means beloved. So you're a man of service. When you're named David, you're of service. You're beloved by many. What's your last name?
Flores.
Oh, so beloved flower. All right, I got it. Bringing beauty and love to the world. What is that entrepreneur? What's your first business?
Well, my entrepreneurship is Macadjus. Macadjus is a digital platform created with artificial intelligence. That in a fun, playful, and entertaining way, give tools to children and teenagers about emotional education. Sadly, in other countries, and in Mexico, because I'm from Mexico.
What part of Mexico?
In Querétaro.
Beautiful.
They do not receive emotional education. So it's very sad because everything starts with bullying and then continues with a lot of things, no? And I'm looking for investors and a marketing agency. So that's why I'm here.
Well, I have a lot of relationships. How much? Wait, hold on. I got more questions. How much are you raising?
$25,000.
$25,000? And what type of return do I get on that $25,000?
In the United States.
United States? Is there a valuation at the $25,000? Or is it a safe note? Is it a loan?
No, it's a valuation of what we need for making this reality and registered mark and all those things.
Wow. And how old are you?
I'm 9 years old, but my mom is right here.
Yeah, I can see your mom. She's very proud of you, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Can you do me a favor? I fund a lot of companies. I have TV shows. that fund a lot of companies. Would you email me your deck so I could consider?
I will give you a card. There's my contact and my email, so we can get in contact, and I would love to do something with you.
I would love to do something with you. I really appreciate you. You want to hang out and listen to other people's questions?
Yeah, of course.
You're sure you're 9, not 90?
Yeah,
yeah? You look 9. Do you believe in past lives?
Yeah,
of course. I bet you do, because you are an old soul.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. David Da Vinci.
Well done. Good job.
Thank you.
You want to follow that?
It's going to be a hard task.
Yeah. I appreciate you trying.
Well, in being that, I want to start by saying thank you for being David, right? And so in that idea, I don't believe in coincidences either. So being that we're all here gathered, not being a coincidence, let's point out the idea of this being an opportunity. And in this opportunity, what is then your idea of having brought us here? What's the synergy, the synchronicity, and what's the opportunity for us all?
Yeah, so great question. So what I've learned by doing all of these meetups over 200 a year for so many years is that human beings are vibrating cells. So we all have a frequency. And in the idea of a coincidence, for me, I know what I pay attention to, which for me is the frequency of my neighborhood, the frequency of the community. I am putting out into the world in energy, content, whatever I'm doing as a frequency of people that want to help each other and know people that help one another. So young David here is at my frequency. We don't look alike, we're not the same age, he's much smarter than I am, much better looking, but we're at the same frequency. Frequency is an awareness, and the frequency of a 9-year-old who wants to be of service and of value to help one another and know people that help one another. So in the respect of coincidences, when we're elevating our own frequency and we're amplifying that frequency via whatever it is, audio, video, meditative, telepathic, whatever you believe in, it all, the speed of thought moves faster than the speed of time, and we can get into a variety of different things, but it's a frequency. So when I put out a message saying, hey, anybody interested in meeting up at 3 o'clock by my podcast booth, there is a, not coincidence, it's the coinciding of you with that frequency that you're saying to yourself sometimes, I don't know what I'm going or why I'm going, but I'm going. I can't tell you when I speak and I do things, how many people tell me after they're here, oh my God, I don't know why, but I just came, or I felt like I came, or you saved my life. This was a perfect time. I've had all of it happen, because what happens is what you pay attention to. So this is all the vision board stuff in sports, all the visioning performance stuff. When you focus in on or pay attention to something, and then give it your intention. So in order to get here, all of you did something, said something, thought something, felt something, and believed something aligned with being here. So when you paid attention to my invitation and gave it your intention, the mathematical equation of the universe took over. I call it the mathematical equation of luck. What you pay attention to and what you give intention to equals the coincidences in your life, the coinciding in your life, the consequences, results, are all indicative of a frequency-based, mathematically, physically-based equation of I am going to pay attention to what I want and then do, say, think, feel, and believe it until I get what I want or better. Notice or better, because that's where humility comes in, that we don't know what we don't know, because several different times in our lives, especially as entrepreneurs, David, there's no evidence or the evidence is contrary that you're ever going to raise the $25,000. Somebody just over there, I forget who said they rejected hundreds. Oh, Canva. Anybody ever heard of Canva? Anybody use Canva? So the CEO of the Global 500, they funded $2.2 billion. We're in the founding investors of Canva. And she said, yeah, that's one of my favorite investments. We took on the first founding investment in Canva. They had been through a couple hundred people telling them no. Oh, so most people would say, oh, my attention and intention in Canva is not good because 200 people told me no. That's not the frequency of that founder. And what the more no's you get, I think it's amplified on the other side, the greater the success. Because you figure out so much through all the no's until you build something that's going to be super successful. I rarely see something that people say, oh my God, you know, Fireside's the greatest idea. Andreessen, it's worth $1 billion right off the bat. Where's Fireside today? But Jack Canfield's Chicken Soup for the Soul, when 120 publishers said, no, this book sucks, nobody will ever read it, and he sells 500 million books. Those are the things that are successful. Not when everybody goes, oh yeah, this is the greatest thing ever. We're all investing right away. I rarely see it have the amplification on the other side if there wasn't the lessons on the front end of it. And so this is all coincidence-based, frequency-based. And so one other thing on frequency real quick about learning, and I know this from speaking, one of the differentiators in these meetups and other things that I do is I got really good at capturing what resonated with me frequency-wise. So at first I would, if someone said something like, I'll give you a quote that just knocked me to my knees because it meant so much to me, it resonated with me at a frequency level. There's a quote that says, you're either humble or you're about to be. I still get choked up every time I say it out loud. That's how much it resonates. It is something I remind myself with every single day with the successes and the happiness and purpose and passion and profitability in my life. Every day I wake up, I say thank you, and I drop to humility saying, I know God, I'm either humble or I'm about to be. Do not live the other way. I captured those lessons when that hit me, but I also started capturing other things that even mean more. And it's when somebody says something that I immediately evokes some reaction of fear. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Oh my God, you know, how can that person say, do, think, or feel? That's evil. That, you know, when I am so upset about something, then I capture it and I do research to find out why. Why is it resonating with me that much? It's not resonating in the positive, but it's obviously the frequency is so strong. I have a lesson to learn with this because it should not. It's like when your kids fight, best thing you can tell them, you know, I don't know if you have daughters, but I have three and a son, but the daughters, especially the two that's closest, several times when they were teenagers would be like, I hate you, right? And my wife would get totally upset and I'd walk over and I'm like, hey, I just want to thank you girls so much. And they're, what do you mean? I was like, well, obviously I've done my job. And they're looking at me like, dad is a wacko. Like, what do you mean you're doing your job? I go, well, you obviously care so much about each other that the littlest thing that she said to you and you said to her has created all of this negative feeling. You guys must really care about each other a lot to be this upset over the fact that she didn't like your blouse or said something. Think about it. So I started to do research on what resonates with me to the negative as well, doing research on that. And this is all frequency-based, Marcus, to understand energy and in the concept that we are just interfering with an infinite amount of energy.
And that resonates very well because for me, I've developed a consciousness technology.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, and it's...
AI is a consciousness technology, by the way. Yeah, and I use it... So Einstein said you can't solve a problem in the same consciousness it was created. So use AI to ask it for a different consciousness. Say, hey, solve this problem if it's I'm Mark Cuban, or I solve this problem if I'm Elon Musk, or solve this problem as if I'm Einstein. It's a different consciousness. Go ahead.
Oh, well, actually, I wanted to. So, Tecumseh, I'd like for you to ask David Meltzer a question.
Tecumseh? What does that mean?
Mr. Banks, here's a thoughtful question you could have me ask David Meltzer, tuned to his business acumen meets spiritual awareness style. David, how do you balance scaling an impact-driven organization with staying deeply connected to purpose? especially when investors, partners, or even team members begin pulling in more transactional directions. It invites a grounded but high-level response. It could open up a bridge for your model's hybrid nonprofit-for-profit ethics. And tech comes as conscious tech edge. Want me to tune the question a little more for investment context or emotional resonance?
Wow, that's awesome. So it's asking how to scale business with the conflict between the pragmatic, incremental use of time and the infinite that we live within. The human experience in a subset of a spiritual experience. It's one of the biggest conflicts we have as entrepreneurs, especially entrepreneurs that want to create impact or social impact. Yeah, so how do we scale that business when continually we're going to be faced with different scarcity, different opinions, and realities of the human experience, like money, right? Which is one of the biggest conflicts when we're trying to have a nonprofit for profit, doing well to do good, all the things that I live by, knowing my mission is making a lot of money to help a lot of people. And so one of the greatest things that we can do to scale a business under the guise of the infinite in the human experience is to ask one simple question and make sure that we're always people-based with values, daily practices, and an execution model, which is adaptable to the circumstances of the day. And the question to ask in the reconciliation when there's no evidence, evidence is contrary, when I'm working within an infinite idea, but in a human experience, a pragmatic negotiation, capital, right? I'm very much a dichotomy in that respect. It's the change from I'll be happy when or attaching to an outcome that so many of us do in the construct of the human experience to asking the bigger question. What am I going to do, say, think, feel, and believe for the sake of what? So instead of saying, all right, we got to raise $1 million by the end of the year, I'm going to, or I have raised $1 million for the sake of building a community center in Africa someday, financing 1,000 kids to go to college. For the sake of what? See, when you can reconcile the pragmatic world with the infinite world through meaning, meaning is relativity. Relativity is how we deal with time and space in the most effective way, because believe it or not, there's infinite time and infinite space, and human nature and human experience can't handle it. Just in the nature of infinite, you can't understand infinite. You realize that. Like, human minds and brains cannot. So how do we reconcile it? By giving it meaning. And how do we give it meaning? By a simple question. For the sake of what? When you start asking yourself that question, you will be applying your why to everything you do, not searching for it. You won't feel empty, you won't feel void, shortages, and obstacles, and everything will come to you at the right time in the perfect place, even if you feel there's no evidence or the evidence is contrary to where you want to be, by not attaching to the outcome, thinking this is what I think I want or better for the sake of this.
So my question, I'm not sure if it's working.
It's recording, that's
okay.
It.
Okay, so the question I have is, I love what you said about building something for the sake of. And so the product that I have right now, we are not raising capital at the minute, but I, when I pitch to people, they say, okay, what is it for? And I have tried using, it is for the sake of helping founders idea validate for free and build the companies. So the feedback that I normally get is, but while I'm sharing my why and I'm sharing the purpose with which it was built, they're always applying, okay, it is not going to make money or scale at $1 million MRR or, you know, a 10 million ARR soon, so it's not pitch worthy or it's not something I'm interested in. So I want to understand from your perspective, like you're saying, the why and the purpose and the sake of, how do you meld that in those conversations?
Yeah, so when we look at the criteria of how people understand value, let's look at how value is articulated. So the difficulty that people have isn't in the value of what they have, it's in their capability of articulating value. Right, I am a bullshitter, inherently, genetically, energetically inherited the ability to bullshit. Therefore, I can articulate value from ether. And I've done it in the past. And you know some great people that market shitty products, they're able and capable of articulating value of ether. That's not what I want to do anymore because I understand value. Value can only be derived in two ways. And then we have to practice articulating value for the sake of whatever it may be, because in a quantitative way, what people are asking for is, I appreciate your theories and right. your altruism, but how the fuck am I going to make money? Excuse my language, David. I'm sorry. How the F?
I like how you said, don't worry.
Yeah. Worry is a wasted emotion, right?
Yeah. I take the good things from a person and the bad things, so I just let it go.
Me too.
Dang.
Thank you.
I didn't even know those words when I was that old.
I appreciate his forgiveness. So think about this. If value is derived by giving people more of what they like, more of what works, and more of what they know, or take away what they don't like, what's not working, or what they don't know. That's the only way value is derived. Therefore, within the context of what I want to do for the sake of what I want to do it, I need to practice, because it's the only way that we get better, articulating that value to exceed what I'm asking for. So I call this the 120 rule, which is a test of progress for me and practice for me. So if I'm practicing articulating a value, I want to be able to articulate a quantitative value by giving you what more of what you like, what's working, or what you know, or taking away what you don't like, don't know, or is not working, taking those away, and then being able to articulate $100 of value when I'm only asking for 20. Because very few people, if you have credibility of a certain level, they will reject your $100 offer if you're only asking for 20 back. So if I have a certain level of credibility and a certain emotional connection, and I said, hey man, I have a $100 bill, can you give me a 20 back? Most people will say yes. That's a far greater statistical success in raising money. Because imagine if I'm articulating value of raising money in my business for the sake of this, and I'm capable and able of giving you this in a quantitative way and articulating effectively, the same high level of statistical success, why wouldn't you say no? And how comfortable and confident would I be in saying, can you see any reason you won't want to invest?
Yeah, makes sense.
Right? I'm going to give you $100 and you're going to give me 20. Can you see any reason you won't want to invest? Credibility may be an issue. Time, emotion, and value absolutely could be an issue. But statistically, the majority of the people will say yes. Hi, Chris. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm your typical Canadian hockey dad.
Nice.
Both son and daughter. Basically, my existence was take them early in the morning, do this, and then I would take them to every meetup that I ran, every business thing that I ran. And, you know, it was a big part of my life. And now my daughter's in university, my son's about to start university, and now I've got this kind of empty spot. So I start reflecting on, like, legacy. Okay, is it like a big thing? I don't know what that's going to be. And I'm just wondering, I mean, clearly you've kind of developed a legacy, and I just want to know, at what period in your life did you start thinking of that outward need of legacy of how do I want to be remembered? On top of that, how has it evolved as you know, you've gone through different chapters of life?
Yeah, so in several different times of my life, being in the financial position, good, bad, and then good again, legacy came up. And originally it was financial legacy. And I didn't work through that financial legacy very well. And then it became understanding that the legacy that I wanted to leave was the impact that I had. And so my mission became directly aligned with my legacy, which was to empower others to empower others. So my legacy became very focused in the fact that if I could find 1,000 people and spend enough time with them, have enough content with them, be engaged at a close enough level to them that they could pay forward the values that they customize from me, the daily practices that they customize, personalize from me, the execution models that they derived and empowered and customized, personalized from me, then they could carry that forward. And then I actually could take my human experience in the respect of remembrance, reminding, recollecting, and to the infinite, I could create an infinite legacy. So instead of wanting my name on buildings, think about how many names you see on buildings that are significant donors. Anybody that walks through a university, you know, your daughter's at university right now, I bet you there's 100 different names on buildings at that university of people who gave 7 figures or more to the university, thinking they were leaving a legacy, a great impact by building that business. It's the impact that's the legacy, not their name on the building, because you don't know any of those names. They'd be surprised. Oh, it's all you're good.
Yeah. But I think what you're saying is that to be like the example you give, to impact those 1,000 people who can then multiply that 1,000 to another, let's say 100,000, that's the legacy you're creating by multiplying the value for those people in your first degree and then at the multiple degrees of value creation.
I am my mom's legacy. You don't need to know my mom's name. You probably don't know my mom's name. Some of you have met my mom, but I'm my mom's legacy. When someone tells me, like over there, oh, wow, your mom must be proud. Like, that's her legacy. They don't know a name. So I think legacy can be equated to any stage of your life to impact. And if we truly do our best, learn lessons and have fun to help empower people to make things better. People ask me all the time, what would you put on your tombstone? One word, kindness. Like if I could have a legacy that I pass forward to people, it would be kind. It's simple. I mean, the impact that kindness can have, like simple things. I just wrote a forward to a book called Imagine If. And it had a great impact, a simple book. But I started thinking in the realm of, imagine if I could empower everyone on earth to, when they see trash, to pick it up and put it in its appropriate place. That's an amazing impact I'd have on the world. The waters, all of our waters would clean up, our skies would clean up, the amount of economic impact it would have, the health that it would create. If I simply could, imagine if David Meltzer could empower everyone on earth when they saw trash to put it in its appropriate place. That's not rocket science. I'm not Elon Musk, right? I haven't figured out Neuralink or Tesla or SpaceX. But I promise you, I would have more impact on the earth if I could somehow figure out how do I empower everyone on earth when they see trash to pick it up and put it in its appropriate spot. That's legacy. Awesome. Next question.
Yeah.
Yes, Joel.
David Sogsley, the family here.
Yes.
As a dad myself, a dad like you. What's kind of like the number one thing that you believe is like most important to teach like your kids?
Yes.
Like the next generation as a skill, you know, or
so yeah, so what would you teach the next generation? So first of all, I tell my kids three things every day. I text them, call them, email me. I tell them I love them, I'm proud of them, and I always have their back. All I ask them, they do their best, learn lessons, and have fun. The three things that I would teach my kids to prepare them for the future, to create a differentiator in their future as far as capabilities, one, they need to practice AI. They should be practicing AI every single day. I don't care what they're practicing it for sports statistics or Canva or, I don't care, but they need to be on AI every day. Two, they need to read. See, your brain and your mind, right? The time to a clock is like your brain to your mind. It's an exercise mechanism to read. And the discipline and the muscle that you're creating is to differentiate between what's real and what's imagination. And those kids that have a greater capability or awareness to what's real and what's not real are going to do way better in the future. So understanding AI, practicing AI, and reading are two of the three. The last one is knock on door, whatever that means today. If I could get my kids still today, if I could give them one discipline that I think would put them so far above any other kid their age, is give me 1 year with your kid or my kid, and I would teach them how to knock on doors, 150 doors, 7 days a week for one straight year. You know, if I was gonna create the Mormon religion, instead of sending them on a mission for 2 years, I would just have them knock on doors for 1 year, 7 days a week. I don't care if they're selling God, solar, security, pest control. I promise you that kid, combined with practicing AI and reading, will be so far ahead, successful and happy and fulfilled with such great capability and skill set. So once again, as a reminder, tell your kids, I love you, I'm proud of you, I always have your back. Ask them, did you do your best? Did you learn lessons and have fun? And then teach them those three things the best that you can.
Yeah,
Hi there, yeah. So
good to see you again.
Good to see you. Thank you for this presentation. So I want to frame things in the context of like instant gratification, you know, the culture that we live in, and a bit of context. I just surpassed 100 episodes of my podcast, and you said something there about alternate value, right? And especially in this age where there's a proliferation of podcasts, the value is not the direct monetization.
All the time.
So when you talk about alternate value, you're working with your clients, what reframing strategies do you give them in terms of a longer view lens on value?
Yeah, this is really important in all aspects of life. There's a saying that I hold true. Things happen slowly, then all of a sudden. And so I created, and I'll be happy to send it to all of you. I believe everything, including a podcast, takes 1,000 steps. Everything. Some are incrementally, those 1,000 steps are within 2 seconds, but we never know how long it's going to take. So under my perception, I know that everything that I really want or do is going to take 1,000 steps. I know that all the steps aren't equal. I know some are slippery, broken, muddy. A lot of times I have to take 3 steps back to get 5 steps forward. I know all this to be true. But the number one lessons of the 1,000 steps that it takes to get to where I want to be or better, and making sure it's where I want to be or better, not what you want for me to be or better, not what's missing or what I don't have. In the context of the 1,000 steps, the greatest attribute or perspective I can have is that it's going to take 90% of my time, no matter how much time that is, emotion, value, and effort, 90% of it to get to 250 steps. Because if I don't understand that, I'm going to quit. It's not going to be me falling on the steps, the muddy steps, the broken steps, taking 3 steps backwards that are going to stop me from getting to 1,000 steps. It's going to be me quitting. And so understanding that 99% of the people, when they set out to do something or better in their lives, quit because it takes 90% of the effort in everything they have, money, time, emotion, and value, just to get to 250 steps. So 99% of the people quit. Here's what's sadder. Of the 1% of the people that remain, it is less than 5% to get to 500 steps. That's the way the exponentiality works. That's the way progress works. That's the way human nature creates conflict and understanding. That's why we see no evidence or the evidence is contrary, because it takes 90% to get to 250 and only another 5% to get to 500. Here's the saddest thing. Of the 1% that was left, 99% of that 1% quit before they get there. Because that's when everybody really starts saying, dude, you are wasting your time. The people who love you most are like, I'm so afraid for you. You're delusional. This is never going to happen. You got 200 different VCs that said Canva sucks and nobody will ever buy it. You're never going to get funded. 200 VCs said you're never going to get funded. Quit. But of the 1% of the 1%, it's less than 5% to get from 500 steps to 1,000. And less than 5% of the effort, time, emotion, and value to get the remaining way to where you want to be or better. And so if we don't go into the climb knowing that it takes 90% of the effort, time, emotion, and value, everything we have, just to get a quarter of the way there, we're going to quit. And that's why it's never the mistakes that stop you from getting to where you want to be or better. It's the lack of commitment. And commitment happens up front. It becomes a non-negotiable. It's not something that you get along the way. You need a desire that you must be what you can be, and you're willing to learn, do your best, and learn, and have fun doing it, and getting to where you want to be or better. You don't know where you really want to be, but you need to have a divine direction so that the rejection that occurs in the detours become a redirection, not a rejection, in a divine detour, and then divine time takes over. It is not just the grind. You have to have faith. When there's no evidence and evidence is contrary, if you don't believe in your God, and if your God is an infinite in its nature, if your God is an omniscient and all-powerful, if your God isn't part of a unified, abundant, infinite system of thought, if your God doesn't protect you, promote you, love and perfect you more than your mom, then change your God. Because it's going to take that type of faith to get you to where you want to be or better. It is wisdom and faith that will shorten the distance of resistance that you create for yourself.
Is God required?
Your God.
Yeah, no, I'm an e-God.
I believe that in order to get to where you want to be or better, you have to believe in something bigger than you that loves you, protects you, promotes you, or perfects you. Because when there's no evidence or the evidence is contrary to where you want to be, you will feel punished, not protected, if you don't believe in something bigger than you that loves you more than your mom. It's just human nature. You will feel punished, and once you feel punished, you're lost. Once you take that perspective that I am being punished instead of I'm giving an opportunity to learn, to grow, to expand, to get to where I want to be or better, and I have something bigger than me that's making sure I get there, but I got to play my part. And wisdom and faith are the parts that we have to play in order to get there. And I absolutely believe if you don't have faith, you're not going to get there. I've never met one Hall of Famer athlete. I've never met one billionaire, millionaire. I've met plenty that say they don't believe in God, but they have faith in something bigger than them.
Everything starts in the mind, so you kind of have to, like, when, let's say you're releasing an album, you have to, or you're just starting as an artist, you need to make them believe in something that doesn't exist. It might take 6, 7, 9 months to finish that album, and you need to make people believe, because otherwise, who's going to listen? Who's going to buy? I think sales is energy. It's an energy exchange. You're not selling. It's your energy at the end of the day. And I wanted to talk, to ask you about, essentially, you brought up quitting, and I think I work with CEOs, coaching them energetically. I think eventually they reach a cap, whether it's a limiting belief, a childhood trauma, that also caps the amount of money that they're making, right? So I think you're one of the best people to answer this question, and it's essentially, what is the biggest or most reoccurring limiting belief around money that you have to work through?
Yeah, and not only did I have to work through, so I believe there was just enough money for me. I believe that money was a negotiation and a trade. I had no faith in the energy of money. So the meaning I gave money was for me to help other people, and I confused the fact that because I wanted the money for me to help others, that there was only a limited amount. I believe that if you gave me money, that you had less. And I believe that there was this zero sum game. So I had no problem giving my money because it made me feel amazing. But I didn't understand that I had to seek what I was given. That the more that I give, the more I'm given. Although the Bible says you will receive, it is an activity. It is an intentional behavior receiving. Most people have a problem receiving. And so my relationship with money was there's just enough for me for everything I wanted instead of more than enough of everything for everyone. So I was living in a zero sum game where I would give my money and then not receive more back. I would receive less back. And if you give and receive less than you give, you're going to end up at zero. And if you don't have faith there's more than enough of it, then you won't have the confidence to, one, seek all that you're given. So although other people saw that I was being punished when I lost everything, over $100 million, I changed my mindset, thanks to my wife and my mom, what am I being given here? And I'll tell you, 18 years later, I was given my life by losing everything. I was promoted. Look at my life right now. I'm so promoted. And it would have been but for my perspective, my mindset of, okay, what am I being given? This is a big loss. I have given so much. What am I being given? Oh, I'm being given a redirection. I'm been given a gift of my life, my marriage, my family, my wealth. I've been given a gift of shifting a paradigm from I need to get more because there's just enough of it and I need to compete for it instead of I wake up every morning, I am happy, I am healthy, I am wealthy, I am worthy. What am I doing to interfere with it? I'm going to use wisdom and faith to shorten the distance of interfering with an infinite amount of everything for you, David, and for you, Chloe, for you, there's enough for all of us. So I need to give more, teach people to look and seek what they're given, receive more, and then ask for more than more with comfort and confidence, because I know there's more than enough. Because if I receive more and I ask for more than more, now I can give more than more, be given more than more, receive more than more, ask for more than more than more. You see where I'm going to end up when I'm 80? With more than enough of everything for everyone.
I think a lot of people like quantify abundance, or it's even when they say abundance is like not the lack of anything, let's say, but even that is a quantity. Abundance is a frequency.
Yes.
That you feel. It's a state of fullness and plenty. It's not something you achieve, it's something you're constantly.
It's infinite.
Practicing. Exactly. Exactly.
And we, in human nature, human experience, We try to quantify infinite, but the infinite is not quantifiable. It takes faith. Infinite takes faith. But I live in the infinite as a human experience. Human experience for me, as we finish up, defined by the time my heart started till the time it stops. Created a certainty of time, which is 24 hours a day. Within that context, I pick and choose and prioritize my 24 hours a day. I'm guaranteed, he's guaranteed 24 hours a day in my human experience, except for the last day of our lives, we'll be cheated. I'm okay with that. So when I wake up in the morning, I have my non-negotiable behavior for the 24 hours, my hybrid negotiable behavior and my negotiable behavior according to what's important to me. And I do my best. Activities, that's all I have is activities. We try to categorize activity, work, right? Play, vacate. No, they're just activities. So I want to use activities that are aligned in my divine direction to be what I desire to become in the best of my ability, using gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and inspiration. I apply my why. I don't search for it. It's not missing. I'm part of it. And the way I apply my why is to clear the interference between me and the why, me and the inspiration, me and the infinite. Infinite information. Infinite energy. Think about just the two infinites. You are part of infinite information becoming more recognizable because of technology. People are overwhelmed with what they perceive to be an infinite amount of information, not even close to infinite, what they can get through, what we get through. But think about infinite energy. Imagine if you only spend minutes and moments interfering with the infinite energy that you're a part of. People say to me all the time, how the hell? You're 57 years old, I'm in better shape than you, I'm younger than you, I'm stronger than you, I'm faster than you. How is it I can't keep up with you? How do you have all this energy? I can't tell you, 10 people today is like, I love your energy. You always, David, your mood. Yeah, you know why? Because I only spend minutes and moments interfering with it. I have practiced over 18 years recognizing my reaction to fear and dissipating the need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful, worried. Pick one of them. I promise you'll double your energy. If I took away from all of you just tomorrow, you will not, I will bless all of you, no worry tomorrow at all. Do you know how much more energy you would have if you had no worry? What if I said you have no need to be offended tomorrow? Imagine how much energy. You have no need to feel separate, inferior tomorrow. One day, imagine how much more energy you would have. You would have greater access to the infinite energy and information that's allowing you to elevate your frequency, your awareness, to be more aware. Why do we want a higher frequency? Because you're more aware. Life is easy. If you enjoy what you don't like or don't love, if you enjoy consistently, persistently, the pursuit of your potential, life will tell you all its secrets. In other words, life is easy. You got the cheat codes. How do we make life easy? Dissipate the dis-easy, the interference. So God bless all of you.